Okay, Chris, welcome to episode 74 of Podcast Podroid. My name is Russell. Who else is here?
Good evening, Leon.
Not via Skype.
No, hey. I'm actually here in the flesh.
Yeah, not a hologram.
In Cardiff. It's brilliant to be here.
I am here as well.
It's good to have you, Rich.
Thank you.
It's been a while.
Yes.
And I'm also here.
It was a late one last night. I'm already flagging this. It was Friday night. Yesterday we were down in Port Talbot at Blanco's Hotel for an evening with Brian Flynn, which is why you're on these shores. And it was a really good evening, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We should probably dedicate this to Chris Wathen. His timing has never been more exquisite. With about two minutes to go before.
I've never seen you look more relieved.
Yeah.
A few years now.
And, yeah. I think I now genuinely know what Alex Ferguson was referring to when he talks about squeaky bum time. Having to do the Q&A. But Chris arrived to save the day. And it was a really good night. There was Leon Britton. There was Adam Curtis. I think Leighton Phillips. Who else was there?
Rugby players.
Sean Holly. The Bear.
The Bear. Brian's dad, Jim, who's a bit of a local legend in Port Talbot as well, actually. As well as being a quite a renowned scout, was the head of the Welsh Schools FA for a time. First non-teacher, actually, to be the head of the Welsh Schools FA. And after being made redundant from the steel industry, as many in Port Talbot were, became a very renowned social worker and has won quite a lot of awards. He was particularly noted for his work with the elderly. Had not met him before. Obviously, heard a lot about him. It's really good that he was there. Sight and hearing are kind of failing, but you know, to meet him and to kind of hear some of the stories about him, actually, and feel a love for Brian's dad, Jim, that was there in the room in Port Talbot was really lovely.
Mark was there, Tosh fan?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's good to see him again. And his son, Aidan.
It was Aidan, yeah. And Brian made a point of making a bit of a fuss of Aidan. It was nice to meet Rich Taylor. Rich, I would have said leader before tomorrow night, but I was very pointedly and firmly, but politely, told that it's Lido. So it's Avon Lido.
Is it Lido as in the outdoor swimming pool? Lido.
Yeah.
Because that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'd always thought it was Avon Lido. I said Avon Lido, but I mean, clearly that is not, it is Lido, like a swimming pool.
Yeah. And so Rich Lido on Twitter was there.
Their pictures next to where the old Lido
where it was.
And the leisure centre used to be, wasn't it? The complex. I saw the Manic Street Preachers play there in 1998.
I saw Super Fair Animals play there. In 98,
and
maybe
supported by Mannix was supported by Mogwai, if I remember correctly.
And Super Fairnals was supported by Granddaddy.
Oh, decent bills.
It was.
That's pretty decent bills, isn't it?
Anyway, this isn't a music podcast. Neither is it a retro gaming podcast, which was what it was almost going to turn into. Genuinely, I hadn't heard this phrase in 30 years. Go on, utter it again. That legendary console.
Yeah, I was just saying, talking about the Neo Geo, it was this kind of legendary, incredible console that held like sort of the mysteries of the universe at the time. So it was
an
amazing
arcade game in your room, basically. No, I never knew anyone who had one.
But every school had somebody who had a friend whose friend had one.
Yeah, I feel like our Neo Geo is Ethan Ampadu. Just this like supreme being, unbelievable skill set beyond comprehension, it would appear at times.
How
is
this possible?
It's retro games and it's football as well, all in one. I would say, just in case we move on from Brian Flynn, I thought it was amazing. Russ, I think it was you who asked where Ramsey should go, and Brian was pretty clear he should be aiming at, or he should be signing for Barca, which I'm not sure I necessarily agree with Barca as such, but that's the level he will be at.
Yeah,
in January or in the summer.
He made a point of saying he's good enough as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say, okay, well, he would say that because, you know, Ramsey was a brilliant player for his under-21 side back in the day. But personally, I've been arguing for a while, and you get into spats when you argue this on Twitter, but that Ramsey is good enough for the biggest clubs in the world, as far as
I would agree,
especially on the free transfer.
Yeah, and I would say as well, you can't, like, having, this is what I really kind of picked up from Brian, I mean, in your book as well, but especially listening to him talk, this really isn't a guy who says things he doesn't mean, and he doesn't kind of play kind of media games as such, probably to his detriment in his career, I would say. Like, if he says Ramsey's good enough for Barca, it's because he's good enough for Barca, I think. And he would probably say, if he was only good enough for, I don't know, Leicester or Liverpool or a team of that standard, he would say that's who he would play for. He's very sort of straight down the line.
You just compared Liverpool to Leicester, where we're going to get a lot of angry Liverpool fans replying to this podcast.
Yeah, okay, like, yeah, one of them is like a recent EPL champion, the other is like, is not. But the point being is they're two sort of normal teams. But Ramsey is your kind of, your Barca, your Real, your Juventus, that kind of level. And I thought Brian was really cool how he spoke about that. And he was very clear in his thinking.
That was the thing. It wasn't just like, oh, it'll be Barca. Maybe it was like actually quite specifically this club.
Yeah.
And this is a man who's seen Ramsey at 15, 16, 17.
Yeah.
There was a nice montage that had been put together, wasn't there, by I forget who it was actually. Was it?
I think Dan was one of the guys involved with FC Cymru, is it? Or Eat Sleep, and he put a montage together of Flynn's. So there was goals, but it was also footage from matches that he was a manager of or a coach involved.
Yeah, the 2021, the Rams, like everyone kind of remembers the England goal, which was unbelievable. I mean, like an adult man at the top level of the game would be an incredible player to score that goal. But I'd completely forgotten about the goal against Italy. He shouldn't really have been trying something so outlandish because it was such a serious game. And he tried it and it worked. Like, I don't see many people trying that. I mean, it wasn't a brilliant kind of, it wasn't at the same level as the England goal, but it was kind of like a flick in the build-up to it and then quite like an outrageous attempt on goal. And he went in.
Yeah, set himself up. You know what he was doing? He set himself up for it on his knee to volley in.
Was that down with the Liberty?
Yes, yeah, we won 2-1. I mean, it's interesting because I got the impression, like, there were quite a few people there who maybe, you know, knew Brian's playing career, knew his club management career, but maybe didn't know so much about his time as under-21 manager last night, and maybe people who hadn't seen those goals before in the room, actually, and it was like this sort of,
yeah,
he got that sort of sharp intake of breath, which you can hear actually from the England fans at Villa Park when he scored that goal, because it came completely out of nowhere. England were dominating that game, and it was just like, whoa, what have we just seen here?
Didn't we draw that one up at Villa Park?
It was 2-2.
Lost at home and then drew up there. Yeah. That was the order of the games. He was the best player by quite some margin across those two games.
Yeah. The youngest, I'm pretty sure, on the pitch as well.
I think he was, yeah.
And I think, like, it's kind of, it's really cool the way, kind of, the way, like, the regeneration of the other senior team now is working, because I think it will benefit Ramsey massively, because playing with, like, Ampadu, Smith, Brooks, these are better players around him now than he's had. I mean, people like Ledley, King have done great jobs, Edwards, but they are not, never were, and never could be on his wavelength in the same way that the younger guys coming through now are. So actually, I was going to say in the later years of his Wales career, but it's not the later years, it's the peak year Ramsey's in now. He's surrounded by the perfect players for that. And a manager who, fingers crossed, is going to be focused on bringing out the best offensive play to suit our players. So it's brilliant. We've got Ramsey, and it's kind of like Leon, you've often said on Twitter, it's astonishing that he's not appreciated by Arsenal fans in the main. And it's astonishing. I don't think he's appreciated enough by some of our fans either, I don't think. Certainly in terms of, there seems less love for him in terms of singing, maybe chanting, I'm not sure, compared to others. But I think he's phenomenal. I'm like really happy Ramsey as well.
I just think the thing that kind of counts against him, and it shouldn't matter at all, is that he's quite a diffident person, and he's one of these players that will sort of go, it sounds like a cliche, I'll do my talking,
out on the pitch,
yeah,
in terms of performance. I'm not going to go around ranting and raving. I've said before, I think he had the captaincy too early. I think he'd make a great captain now if it was to come his way, but he'd get it a little bit too soon. And then the circumstances in terms of Gary Speed and how his period in charge came to an end was I think, a massive burden for Ramsey as well. All of which I think he struggled a little bit with. But I think he's a diffident individual.
Yeah, and I think as well, like, even similarly in his like style of play is kind of reflected where like he will try flicks and through balls, which by the nature of what they are not going to come off. And he's not going to kill himself to get that ball back because it's not really his role. He's done jobs for the team and he's sacrificed himself, particularly Coleman at times. But because he hasn't got that kind of side to his game, I don't think, in terms of winning it back, possibly because of the club he's played at and the nature of how they play. So I think maybe that doesn't endear him to some people. But to me, he's just top level. You have to have some of that.
Another theory just popped into my head. Would he be more appreciated maybe by Wales fans? Which is not to say that he isn't, because I think by and large, clearly he is. If we didn't have a Bale or an Allen, he would be the main man and we'd kind of go,
oh, oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So actually, it's because he's got... Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There would have been a time he would have been the star player
yeah.
in the squad, you know, and likewise, and even at club level, one of the reasons he may not be... Although he does get a bit more stick, actually, from Arsenal fans than some of their other players. But maybe he's just been too associated with the dying Wenger era. Whereas if you were an Arsenal fan, used to winning trophies, or certainly used to being at the business end of English football, to kind of watch and think, yeah, it's not about us anymore. And they know it. And so in the end, he's just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, it's context, is it? I put this on... It might be the most popular tweet I've ever put out there because, fortunately or perhaps unfortunately, TalkSport retweeted it pretty quickly after I put it there. And this is not having a go at Liam Brady, who is quite obviously an absolutely top-class, fantastic player. But I put this tweet out and said, look, Liam Brady scored something like 43 goals for Arsenal. He won one trophy, the FA Cup, and then he left for Juventus when he was 27-ish, about Ramsey's age now. Ramsey's got 50-plus goals from midfield, won 3 FA Cups, scored winners in 2 finals. How come Liam Brady is the worshipped Arsenal legend who no Arsenal fan will ever say a bad word about, but plenty say bad words about Ramsey? I just didn't seem to compute to me either. But the point is context. You know, Arsenal were perhaps not a great team for a lot of Brady's time there in the 70s. Ramsey, it's unfortunate for him, he has come after Vieira. After,
yes, absolutely.
Petit, after the
absolutely.
Invincibles.
Absolutely.
And so, compared to that...
Yeah, absolutely. So he's like some of the Liverpool players who plays in the 90s. Didn't matter what they did. They didn't, as a crop, do what the previous generation did. And that's what you get used to. Ramsey and that sort of crop... When did he sign? It's 10 years ago, isn't it?
2008,
isn't it? So 10 years ago, of course, that has been a period where the story of Arsenal was the story of the decline of the club under Wenger, albeit a comparative decline. They'd have to find someone else to win, Jack, now.
Of course they will, because they're not going to be the Invincibles ever again.
That's
probably
why
you
could see him at Barcelona, which I think would be the ideal. My understanding is they're not really in the hunt for him now because they think they fill that vacancy. But if he was to go, it would have to be one of those types of clubs. But I wouldn't mind seeing him at Juventus either, in a Champions League final next spring. You heard it here first, kid.
Yeah,
you heard it here first, kid.
The line of Welsh players at Juventus is a good one as well, actually.
And then Juventus win it, and Ramsey scores an overhead kick in the final. And we've got that was 2 years running. Wales has done that. Thanks, boys. We're being spoiled.
But it's interesting to think about like 10 years ago, and he was the one we thought was going to be the big star for Wales more than Bale. I mean, Bale was a left back, left wing back under Toshack. You know, Flynn always thought he was going to play further forward, always played him on the wing or further forward. And
Bale is at Spurs in 2008, isn't he?
Yes,
going nowhere. They're looking at farming him out. Is this when they were looking at taking him to Birmingham City?
It took a while.
Alex McLeish was interested in him at Birmingham
City.
Forest.
Dreaming.
That was it.
Nobody really saw Bale becoming Wales' top scorer until fairly recently in a way, like let's say like when he kind of started, when he really started scoring goals, probably like the last.
He's our leading all-time scoring international fullback, isn't he?
He's getting, I think he's getting a golden boot.
Yeah.
Ahead of Spain game or at half time or something. Nobody really saw that coming when he was a teenager.
So I probably should say, sorry, go back to Flynn. So well done and congratulations to Ashley Drake from St David's Press for putting it all on.
Yeah, it was a good night.
He had a lot to sort of contend with. He was on his phone an awful lot.
He did actually. It was quite a stressful night.
When was everybody going to be arriving? But no, it was good. And the hotel did well, and it just went off. It went off really, really well. So a lot of books went as well. I sense a lot of books shifted.
Ashley was talking about his next project football wise, but with is a history, and I think it's going to be three parts: history of Welsh football internationals, every single player.
The who's who,
which sounds, if you're into that kind of thing, it's going to be wildly
like my type of thing.
I am really into that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed it's only three volumes, actually, but still.
Some people think, oh, you know, I like the drama and the narrative, not so much into the stats. I'm like, no, just give me the stats. Just give me the stats.
Well, this
would
be
that.
Narrative, drama and stats.
Wow.
So it'll be everything, every single thing for every single person.
That's a heady mix, Rich.
Yeah,
and the history of the Wales football shirt as well. Shaky's involved in it as well. I think he's got to finish off the Tottenham one, and that's going to be a sort of, you know, real kind of high end quality product, high end coffee table type book. And I'm definitely having a copy of that.
Two.
One to read and one just for posterity, just to leave in the cellophane and let it kind of just gain in value.
Not a bad idea. I think it should be. And I mean, considering how beautiful some of our kits have been down the years, this should be a really stunning book.
With a foreword by Bobby Gould.
Kit design.
Yeah.
Indeed, in every episode.
Yeah. So we did a poll. I think it was, you know, where should he go? Not in terms of clubs, but should he stay in EPL, La Liga, Serie A, or other? There was a couple of responses around sort of buy-in.
That'd be great.
I call it that.
Yeah.
EPL was third choice, and it was La Liga was the main, and I guess people are looking at, you know, one or other of
the I think the fact that to be sort of brought in, aside from the fact he can play for bigger, more historic teams in Serie A or in La Liga, is a guy who's got a history of injuries. These are leagues that are generally perceived to be slower paced and have breaks. He might be thinking that's going to help his career as well, rather than getting hammered.
Yeah, I wouldn't object if he was to go, I don't know, to say a Liverpool. It do appear to be building towards something, but he could go above that now, couldn't he? And at 27, I think he's 27, this is now your peak, isn't it? And in 3 or 4 years' time, you won't really get the opportunity necessarily to get that again.
It's now. It's laughable, his situation at Arsenal, because then they're offering him 66% of what Mesut Ozil gets. And I think Ozil is a fantastic player, but Ramsey is just as good as him.
Mm.
He should be paid the same amount of money as him, and it's incredibly insulting that he's not been. And I think he has to move. And this is kind of his... He hasn't been paid the going rate on his contract at Arsenal, which you could say it's commendable for him for wanting to stick at that club, but I mean,
I didn't realise the gap was that big.
It's absolutely crazy. This is his moment to get his best contract, and he deserves that, and he should.
I genuinely didn't realise the gulf was that huge.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, well,
I think
that explains it all, really, doesn't it?
He's interesting, just maybe to talk about like the idea of loyalty, because I kind of do think that he did owe Wenger, because Wenger showed a lot of faith in him, especially after the leg break.
Yeah.
Very sort of careful in sort of the way he brought him back in. A couple of loan spells, went back to Cardiff, didn't he? Went to Nottingham Forest, but always sort of believed in him, you know, and gradually brought him back. And then he was playing him at a time when he was getting a hell of a lot of stick from Arsenal fans, and they were losing like 8-2 to Manchester United and stuff. And then, you know, you just, you know, I believe in this guy. He's going to come good. And a lot of Arsenal fans just couldn't see it at all. And he did come good for Wenger, and you know, he had that brilliant season when he got the injury halfway through when Arsenal were doing really well in the league. And he came back, and they did win the FA Cup at the end of that season. He scored the winner, and that ended their 9-year trophy drought. So I feel like the Wenger-Ramsey relationship was a strong one, and that, yeah, he kind of owed Wenger some good years at Arsenal. Now Wenger's pretty much, let's say, you know, he was given the boot, wasn't he? That's all that.
Yeah, well,
he owes Arsenal football club absolutely nothing. He owes Arsenal fans absolutely nothing. He went there for $4.8 million, an absolute steal. I don't know, still don't know what Cardiff were playing at with that fee, but there you go. So Ramsey, perfectly within his rights to get the best deal possible for himself right now, whatever that is.
So Cardiff City sold Cornelius for more than Ramsey.
In old money, he's probably entitled to a testimonial, isn't he, after 10 years?
Yeah.
Do players still have testimonials these days?
Yeah.
They do, don't they? Yeah. I'm struggling to think the last player had a testimonial.
Vincent Kompany's got one this season.
Yes. Do you know what? I heard that on the radio this morning. Yeah. So Wales squad was announced yesterday as well. We didn't really touch on that in the last night with Flynn, did we? Because, you know, I suppose in terms of the clips from the Italy and the England game, under 21 games, and that crop of youth, and he talked a lot about Bale, probably a question that's gone begging there in terms of, okay, Ethan Ampadu, David Brooks, Ben Woodburn.
Somebody did ask, do you see a parallel between the young squad that you and Sosha brought through and what Giggs is doing now? And he said yes, he did, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think.
Oh yeah, no, because yes, because of course, yeah, you referred to Giggs kind of being himself,
yeah,
promising youngster coming through. No, you are right, you are right. We didn't go into much depth about individual players. And I thought it was funny, took pelters yesterday around like Joe Roden. People are focusing on this kid, he's 20. And I went, but I checked. He's played 20 first team games, some of which are on loan at Cheltenham Town in League 2, maybe. Certainly not higher than League 1. Fine, and Penny's playing really, really well, and you know, Swans arguably kind of overperforming, given how some of their fans were complaining about not having to spend any money, etc. at the start of the season. So they seem to be doing okay, tight at the back. When we're arguing and falling out, nicely, about rookies like Joe Roden, that's not a bad place to be, is it? In some respects. The players, that's as much as we can kind of pick out of a squad that's got a lot of talent.
Yeah, I mean, I think he can continue to focus and play well, and that's fine. I mean, we've got a really, really good squad. I mean, Joe Ledley is, it would seem, injured, apparently. I kind of had the feeling, as I was watching the Ireland game, we wouldn't be seeing Joe Ledley again. Because there would be no need to see him again. No. You would have to have 4 or 5 injuries to see Joe Ledley play. I mean, look, I'd play Smith ahead of Ledley in any single circumstance.
You were talking about this yesterday when we were on the way down for Talbot, and I've been thinking about it since then. The only sort of fixture I can envisage us playing Ledley in, unless there's an injury crisis.
Oh yeah, injuries permitting, of course.
Would be a glamour friendly at the Millennium Stadium against a team, you know, like Spain, where you kind of give him a chance to...
a testimonial.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a platform by which people can kind of show that, and he gets, you know, he gets 50 minutes and then you send Smith on, you know. But he's injured, apparently, for that specific sort of fixture. You can't really see him.
But
I'm struggling to see
I think Joe Ledley did a great job for us. He adapted his game, but it became quite apparent towards the end. It's a struggle for him now, I think. Particularly playing with the kind of players we've got, I think. It wouldn't be a good fit.
He's got a lot of miles on the clock, isn't he? Because not only has he played a lot of games from a very young age, his entire role, certainly at Cardiff, was just industry and... I mean, not just that's unfair, but a large part of it, he was that classic kind of good engine on him. He's played a lot of minutes, isn't he, over the years.
If he was a car, he would, you know.
Yeah.
But I think what's kind of like a really positive sign is, I think in the past, I mean, I remember it was kind of when Savage had a few good games for Derby, people were saying, oh, this guy could still come in and do a job for us. In theory, well, he could bring experience or this or that. Like, what Joe Ledley has, we don't need. He's still a very competent player, but we've just gone up a level. And I kind of feel, I mean, the same with Andy King. I mean, there would have to be a lot of injuries to see these guys playing. I mean, and I think that's a sign of really good progress, I think. So, yeah, in terms of the Joe Rogan thing, we've got a good squad full of young players who fit what Giggs is doing for the project. So if people aren't in it, it's because they're not part of it at the moment. And then they can either, like Rodin, work and stay focused and get in there, or they can not get in there. And that's just what it is. That we're in a situation, I think, where we don't have to pick everyone who is available to pick. And there will be a lot of people who aren't going to get picked.
Yeah.
I mean, I say a lot for us, small nation.
Yeah, you more or less beat me to the point. That's not something we've been historically used to, is it? We've always looked and thought, well, are they playing at a top club in the top division? Wicked. Are they playing at a top team abroad? Clearly in. Even if it's lower levels, are they playing regularly? In other words, we kind of managed our expectations before going anywhere near the pitch. So with that, without needing to do that anymore, is clearly a sign of being in a much healthier situation
Totally. That
we're really used to.
And that reminds me, like, Leon, you made a brilliant point where a year ago, Ben Woodburn was in his moment, and it was an amazing moment. I think now, if the squad had been announced and Woodburn wasn't in it, I would have accepted that and been, okay, Woodburn isn't playing, he's not in the squad, fair enough, we've got Wilson, Brooks, and then Woodburn can play himself back in. I mean, Woodburn, I wouldn't imagine, is going to start. Certainly not the Ireland game. And I'm completely relaxed and fine about that. I still think Ben Woodburn will be a huge, incredible player. I'd be like 100%. But at the moment, he's not showing that. And he won't play. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's amazing. We haven't been able to do that in the past. We've had people who haven't been playing or been in bad form still playing for us. And that's been to our... It's never really worked. I mean, there might be one or two occasions, but generally speaking, it's not been to our benefit.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
You can't play players back into form at international level.
Yeah.
You just can't. So you're right. But I mean, if we'd have said this time last year, well, he's going to be peripheral at best under whoever the manager was going to be, you'd think, the hell are they going to be playing at, you know? Wilson couldn't get a sniff of a Wales game this time last year. But it's not like Woodburn's career suddenly just nosedived. Other players just seem to have gone...
Yeah, and that's good.
And they just elevated. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, if you look, this is Woodburn's first loan, and so far it's not working out. Wilson's first loan was abysmal.
True, yeah.
And then he kind of stepped up and was excellent for Hull, and he's doing the same thing for Derby now. Wilson looks exactly like the player who will be brilliant for what we're doing. Like an amazing foil for Bale and Brooks.
Mm.
But I think people maybe... Brooks got more of the plaudits than Wilson. I've been mega, mega impressed with Wilson.
There's a bit of a wow factor with him. See, Brooks for me is just finesse and style. And it's just... There's very little kind of just wasted sort of energy. Every run seems to have a purpose. And he is the player for me I'd
Brooks.
Pay. Brooks, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd quite happily pay to just watch player cam. Seriously, I adore watching him. I think he's just a wonderful player just to watch. Mm. And he's still got a little bit of bulking out to do a little bit, I sense. Which Wilson's definitely
well, Wilson,
got as well.
That's the thing, I think, with Wilson, parents of Woodburn. I think like perhaps Woodburn is going to have to go through that process of just filling out a bit more, which will sort of come with age and hours in the gym, I guess.
Or a good desk job.
Yeah.
Work for me.
Which Wilson's clearly done. You just look at him now, he's a
specimen,
isn't he? And he wasn't, like, you know, when we first saw him, he was 16 and he kind of looked 16. And Woodburn still looks young and like he's got some developing to do, and that's fine. Okay, he came out, he made this incredible impact, and then...
But like that Wilson, like, there was like the finish against China, and then there's the free kick. I mean, that free kick against Manchester was, for a start, not all players would have tried that. You have to have a level of belief to try that. The technique was all that. You could tell it was like a guy who was like studied technique on how to strike a ball, you can see where he's getting his influences from very much. So, and to be sort of so like brazenly modelling yourself on like Ronaldo and Bale.
Frank Lampard in the press conference afterwards said that him, Wilson, and who's the young sort of English
Mason Mount,
yeah, to go out. I don't know if Mason Mount is right-footed, perhaps maybe he takes him from the other side. But the two of them do extra free kick practice every day, and so you almost like wasn't surprised that Wilson put that way, because him, both Wilson and Mount, spend a lot of time on their free kicks together. So maybe I don't know. But if it had been on the other side of the field, maybe Mount would have taken it.
But I think that's a nice balance that you need, like a Brooks guy who's sort of finesse, who's calm, who is maybe less outwardly spectacular than your kind of Wilson guy who's going to be smashing it in from 35 yards. I think it's a really nice balance to have either side of Bale, who's still the leader. It's sort of like, I would say about Brooks, I thought... there was maybe two occasions, one maybe against Ireland, there was certainly one against Denmark where he could have shot but didn't, and I think Wilson or Bale would have shot and probably would have, certainly would have got on target and probably would have scored. But Brooks had, I was wondering if he was a little bit leggy because he was maybe injured and he was tired, but I think at that kind of higher level you summon the energy to take the shot and you do it. And I think Eddie Howe said he's incredibly impressed with Brooks' technique, but he said there's more to come from him because he can be an amazing goal scorer as well. So that's obviously something that's been identified as a weakness. This was after he scored that nice finish against Palace. So I'd be really looking forward to seeing Brooks developing on his finishing.
I mean, would you pick for the Spain game Bale, Wilson, Brooks as the front three then, which means no room for Lawrence, who scored a great goal against Ireland and played very well in that game as well?
Yeah. All three of those are better than Lawrence.
Right, simple as that. You know, Lawrence, I mean, has scored three goals in his last six Wales games or something like that. And is,
I could see an argument depending on what the formation was. I like Lawrence, and Lawrence has like quite clearly come on quite a lot. But if I was picking a front three to win a game, it would be Bale, Wilson and Brooks. This is just a real kind of sign of where we're at. We've got combinations. We can change the formation.
There's a quite high degree of probability that we're not going to have a huge amount of possession against Spain. And so there's a question, is Wilson and Brooks, have they just sort of played enough games, you know, professional first team games, to be able to know when to sit in and when just have to kind of help out and try to win that ball back? Lawrence has played more games. I don't disagree with you, actually, overall. But if that's us at home against Ireland then, for example, or even away against Ireland in the following game, fine with that. Is there much point picking these players just to kind of do a lot of harrying of a Spanish defence and a lot of running around and not seeing a huge amount of ball? Do they then just become luxuries, and is there actually much in it for them? But you know,
I think you have to, like, Leon, your point was, I remember this is like from the last podcast, I think you'd said we're yet to score a goal against a good team, the gigs.
Yeah.
And I think I think that was a mistake we made against Denmark with the Conor Roberts and Chris Gunter on that right side. I think to score a goal against a good team, we can't nullify our attack. So I'd be inclined to have Wilson and Brooks, because they're a counter-attacking threat, a sharper one than Lawrence. And then let's see if we can hit them on the break. I don't know enough about... I think Spain are more streetwise now. They could have moved a little bit away from their previous style with Enrique now. So I think they might be a bit more conservative. So I don't know how open they will be.
I think a conservative team that puts six past Croatia.
Well, I
think it could work the other way. And this is my worry, is that during it was frustrating watching Spain during the World Cup with all the brilliant players that they've got. This just desire to want to pass the ball into the net. They do anything other than shoot. To put six goals past Croatia is extraordinary. And if you look at some of the goals, a lot of them came from almost half chances, which is the complete opposite. We're used to Spain overplaying it. And this was a couple of times, it was a case of, I'll have a go, bang. And that could be very, very deadly.
Yeah.
Plus, I also think if you're going to play Spain at all, it's probably best to play them in a tournament where they might freeze, and because they're going to be weighed with huge amounts of expectation. A friendly, this to me is when they're going to be their most dangerous, basically, because there's very little pressure on them. The game won't really mean that much, and they won't necessarily have the pressure. They may have the freedom to express themselves and be told, be a bit more direct, don't take that extra step. Because some of the goals against Croatia were pinged in from 20 yards out, yeah. Which is the kind of thing the Germans do, because the Germans are ruthless. If they get a sniff, they go, boom, we'll have this.
Well, it was a problem Enrique had at Barca with like the fans and the hierarchy and some of the players, was he was not as fond of the possession-based stuff. He wanted a more direct approach. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be really interesting. It's a great challenge for us. And my kind of hope is, I mean, it's a friend that I care exclusively about the Ireland game. I think now there's so few friendlies, I literally don't care. I think it should be about Giggs learning as a trainer.
But there is a purpose to the game in that respect then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I don't care about the outcome as much as what happens during the game.
As long as this game's very good opposition, I agree.
Yeah, totally. Because
there was a time we'd arrange friendlies against teams whose countries we'd never heard of.
Yeah.
And you look back and you think, well, what really was the point of any of that?
But under Toshak, his theory was some of these players were so young, they just needed games. It didn't matter against two, they just needed games.
They weren't playing for their clubs.
And they weren't playing for their clubs. So again, it was quite a fundamental purpose. But I take the broad point. I mean,
this reflects a sign of weakness that we don't necessarily have.
But Gaz made this point last time. Against France, this time more or less last year, we barely laid a glove on them. That's what Gaz said, wasn't it? It was like men against boys for much of the game. And then
the boys came on.
And then our boys came on, and suddenly we had a bit of a toehold in the game. I'd want to see an improvement in that respect. Spain aren't as good as France. Not that I was a first-choice French team either, but I mean, I think we need to a bit closer to this Spain side than anywhere near that French side.
I would, if I had to sort of do like a grade, I would say Giggs at the moment is like a kind of a B+ for me. I'd like to see like the implementation of tactics or shape, substitutions. I want to see evidence of him as a trainer.
But he's going to start that game surely with a pretty much first choice. Notwithstanding what we've said about, you know, a Lawrence versus Wilson, but there's not going to be any rookies, there's not going to be any debutants. Yeah. Conor Roberts maybe return to the bench, stuff like that. It's going to be a more or less, you know, it's going to be an experienced side, isn't it? It's going to be Chester, Williams, it's going to be Hennessy, it's not going to be Moore,
sure. It's going to be a flat back four with Chester and Williams, centre backs, not Meppen.
Which I think is another point why the whole Roden argument, because surely the player you want to now test to see if he can step up another level is Meppen. Now, whether he starts,
I'd be astonished if Meppen isn't the first choice centre back from now onwards. I would be astonished if he wasn't.
Chester got himself sent off the other night, so he's nice and fresh. that was very helpful.
But is this formal worry? Because Villa have been poor this season, just sacked their manager. It's not someone we've really worried about ever since he came into the Wales team, because he's just been so consistently good.
But that's the point Gaz made about Joe Allen. It doesn't matter where he's playing his football. When he turns up for us, he's a metronome. And so actually, it's utterly irrelevant. And yes, we would like to indulge ourselves and hope that he's about to sign for Bayern, or he's about to, you know,
I think
Pep's going to pick him up.
I think Joe Allen gives us like 8 out of 10. I think if he was playing for a better club, he'd give us better.
Well, okay, fine. 100%. But Chester's the same though, isn't it? However, whatever's happening domestically just turns up and is what he is. So I'm going to worry about that. But
all right. Chester is a first choice no matter what his club form is. Then you're saying, Rich, Meppen is now first choice.
Absolutely. 100%.
So that means you don't play the captain.
Me personally, or what I think Giggs would do.
I
mean, no one really cares what I would do if I was head coach.
Then what do you think Giggs will do?
100%. I think Meppen's the first choice centre back. 100%. For Giggs, 100%. I think he'll probably start with Williams, and I think Williams will come off and say goodbye, and then Chester will come on, and that'll be that.
I can see that happening, actually.
I think he's like...
Already?
He's leagues ahead of... No, I'm not talking about a prime Ashley Williams.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Ashley Williams now. I think Meppen is just light years ahead of Chester and Williams.
I think
Conor Roberts is our best right back. By some distance. You said he was an upgrade. You were witnessing an upgrade. And I think I completely agree with that.
The fact that he scored an absolutely brilliant goal with his weaker foot as well, wasn't it? And then he almost scored with a header at the end of an absolutely brilliant move from right back. I can't remember any occasion when Chris Gunter's come close to scoring with a header in his 465 caps. he's come close with a couple of shots.
Yeah.
But like, I've never saw him like on the edge of the 6 yard box, get on the end of a cross. Like,
won a couple of penalties.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a couple, but nothing that you really got your seat. Oh,
pretty good chance in Flynn's game against Bulgaria at home. After about 10 minutes or so, ball came out to the right hand side. He was in acres of space. He had sort of time to pick his spot, and he just put it past the far post. I suppose if that had gone in, maybe it was a very young team, maybe they'd have gained in confidence and won that game, and maybe got something in Switzerland a few days later, and Brian Flynn might have got the job. But yeah, that's a bit of a flight of fancy there. But yeah, well, perhaps the best chance I can remember Chris Gunter having to score for Wales, actually.
Do you play too many kind of young rookie defenders against Spain, though?
They're better than the other people.
I hear what you're saying, but these have never played players. Meppen plays for Brentford, so he's the best striker he's ever faced. You know, they're going up against players whose movement he's never played against before. So that's point. So it's a good test. Yeah. I'm not saying you don't do it because of that. No. But the notion that
that's going to be like something to go from playing for in a championship to playing against Diego Costa.
I think he's better equipped than Chester or Ashley Williams to do it. Chris Meppen will be playing for top six EPL team next season.
He's on that trajectory, I get that.
If not in January, it'll be the start of next season.
But the development isn't helped by being thrown into some players. I think they get chucked in and they thrive, and that's great. But there's a lot of players who get a bit starstruck by that.
I think we're going to have to get used to English media ranting and raving about Chris Meppen. Absolutely. I think he's going to be a colossus.
Against Mexico, he was really, really good, because that goes sort of belly up really early on, doesn't it? Because Ashley Williams goes off.
Yeah.
And it's Lockyer, isn't it, that comes on, I think.
That's a really tough environment. They had probably the best strikers that's probably come up against.
Diego Costa's not playing anyway.
Isn't he?
He's out the squad with a thigh injury.
Oh, okay. Well, that's right.
So he's been withdrawn. Morata, Asensio, Rodrigo Moreno, Aspas. Yeah, nothing to worry about there.
But they'll just play like for Wigan and Derby and Barnsley. One player we haven't mentioned is Tyler Roberts. Beginning to happen for him at Leeds. Yeah. Bielsa trusts you. That is some accolade.
Yeah, people kill to get brainwashed by Bielsa, don't they? In the training compound. Like, yeah. He hasn't left. He hasn't left the compound at Leeds for 2 months. Tyler Roberts.
Yeah.
they've all had dinner.
I thought you meant Bielsa.
Bielsa certainly hasn't. We know
he's
that.
He's got a tent at the training pitch.
He's got form for making people live at the training ground.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That is old school national service. That's what I like to hear.
He wants players utterly obsessed by the whole mission.
Yeah.
Isn't that when players sneak out the window at midnight and steal a golf buggy? That's how that normally ends, isn't it? Well, you get caught trying to escape down the motorway.
Not with Bielsa, it doesn't.
He inspires this incredible loyalty from everyone who's played under him, and so many of them become managers themselves because they're inspired by him.
Pochettino worships him, absolutely. Yeah, for example.
Yeah, you just think like someone who's that hardcore, that he makes players live at the training ground would produce some resentment, but it seems absolutely not with him.
I mean, you think from like Tyler, his point of view.
It's like some sort of re-education camp.
Yeah, well,
it's like the Leon Trotsky of football.
Yeah, I mean, like you could be like have at Leeds they've had some like utter garbage, like managers like Monk, people like that, and to have like a legend of like an all-time trainer. Legend is incredible, and I mean he's got in the team and he stayed in the team, so, and he's scoring.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Bielsa looks like fine, I'll go. And he's coached some top, you know, Riquelme and all these kind of players.
And I think Bielsa's kind of philosophy is he doesn't really care about the wage structure or perceived hierarchy. He will pick the person who does what he tells him to do and fulfills his like potential. So. Yeah, I mean, that's incredibly optimistic. It's really good.
And I wish I'd kind of gone back to the book to bone up on this. And John Wilson's Inverting the Pyramid, so it's like the history. It's a book about the history of football tactics. There's large chunks about Bielsa and just does like crazy different things. And
So yeah, so the players will, if they want to learn, take that stuff in, will have a better appreciation and an awareness of movement and space and all that kind of stuff as well. But for Tyler to be scoring as well, because that's the point as well, be able to believe if he's not scoring as a striker, well, and I know it took a while to get off the mark, yeah. But as soon as he has, bang.
Three goals I think he's got.
They're different types of goals as well,
yeah,
aren't they?
And the last one, who is it they were playing, they beat 1-0 the other?
Remember. That's the thing. So he's scoring winners.
Yeah, important goals.
Scoring with his head outside the area.
And that's cool because we're talking. Like we've then got five. Well, really, we've got six players for the front three spots.
And in the same way that you look at Conor Roberts as an upgrade then on Chris Gunter, you look at Tyler Roberts. You think he is an upgrade on Robson Cowling.
Yeah.
I mean, just for sure. He doesn't have the caps and. Probably a little bit, you know, still a little bit raw, but...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I first saw Tyler Roberts play for our schoolboy team. I think it was against England, actually, and we might have won the game. I'm not sure if he scored, but I think he was 14. So he was 2 years younger than most of the players on the pitch. From watching that, I thought, well, this guy might take the record as our youngest ever player because he was that good at 14. I thought, you know, another 2 years on, he might be ready to... actually played for the senior team at 16. He was that impressive. It's taken a little while longer. He's 19 now, so won his first cap a few weeks ago. But what a manager to kind of find yourself under at this stage. And that's kind of random, isn't it? Because it's not like Bielsa signed him. He's the manager who's been appointed, and he's 19 years old. And if he chooses to take you know.
Yeah.
Take the words of wisdom of his boss on board, then he's gonna hugely. Mm. Yeah.
But we alluded earlier to loan spells for like Woodburn and Wilson. He was at Shrewsbury, he was Oxford as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he played, I think it's like 15, 20 games, maybe a bit more in each spell. And although he didn't score a ton of goals, because Howell's old man is a Shrewsbury season ticket holder, he sort of said, no, good player. So both those fans are like what we saw there. You know, we've done well to get a young, and you know, you've got to, if you're going to play those number of games, you know, as a 17-year-old, you're coming up against some real tough, battle-hardened centre backs. You know, with like 400 or 500 games under their belt, league games. You know, at League One and League Two level. You know, they've seen tons of these young strikers come and go. So to get those number of games and to kind of have that rapport then with the fans of those clubs suggests there's, you know, the raw materials are there. I'd like to see him play. I don't think he's going to start. Like you said, the front three that you talked about earlier, Rich, I think he's more likely. Or Lawrence, but it'd be good to see him now. Get maybe half hour, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because he had impact against Ireland when he came on, didn't he?
Yeah. Really good run, really scored. Yeah. I think he's going to be a really big player for us going forward. Someone who reminds me of is someone me and Rich were talking about on the drive to Penarth this afternoon, which is lovely for the first time I've been down there.
It's no Dennis Powers, but yeah, it'll do.
What's the beach like at Dennis Powers?
Yeah, beaches aren't all that. We've got a castle.
Castle's beaches. Next trip to Cardiff. But we were talking about Stan Collymore, bizarrely. I don't know how that came about, but Tyler Roberts is a bit like Stan Collymore. Hopefully, just on the field, I mean. Hopefully, restricted to...
Sorry, Collymore. Tyler, you were doing so well up to this point.
But people forget what a good player Stan Collymore was.
Please don't sue Leon.
Maybe take this bit out.
I love Stan. I love Stan now. Leon, I believe, is referring to difficulty Stan may have had at some point. No, you're not referring to
I'm referring to certain issues off-field that have made Stan Collymore perhaps more famous than his ability as a player, which
he's an
forget about. He was a hell of a footballer at Nottingham Forest in his early days at Liverpool. And style-wise, there's something a bit Stan Collymore about Tyler Roberts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that would be excellent.
Just the on-field stuff, please.
Yeah.
You're not going to dignify Team GB with anything at all, are we? Shaking your head, Rich. So, what do you want? Predictions for Spain? Because we're going to beat Ireland. We are surely going to beat Ireland. I can't see any other result, frankly. They're still in disarray. Apparently Harry Arter and Roy Keane have had an excellent conversation, according to Martin O'Neill, I read earlier. Whatever that's supposed to mean.
They sat in silence for 3 minutes. They sat in silence for the designated 3 minutes that was given to the meeting.
Yeah.
And then they shook hands and it was all fine.
Right, it doesn't matter because it's just a friendly, etc., etc., but Do you think we can lay a glove on them, or even better?
In a home game, if we get anything out of it, I'd be delighted. I don't think we will. However, look at like games like France game away. It shouldn't be like that. If nothing else, there should be a bit more pressure put on them. I'm going to make more demands. Actually, I still think we'll lose 2-1, but I feel we will lay a glove on them.
But it would be good to score.
Yeah, well,
I think we will get something from them. I'd just love for the game to be at the Carlisle City Stadium, raucous, 35,000 sellouts. That would be ideal.
Yeah.
This has a bit, well, we all know what I'm getting at because we've seen these games before. It doesn't generate the atmosphere for the football team, probably because it's a rugby ground, but there we are.
And it's difficult because I'm a vocal person. I don't want us playing there. But that being said, I would never wish ill on our team in any way, shape, or form. You weren't either, I know that. But I see a scenario where, and I wouldn't want this to happen, we're 2-0 down after 50 minutes, complete silence for the next 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's it. Well, that's what happens.
What was the first game that Wales ever played at the stadium? Was it Brazil?
Finland,
yeah. Lost 2-1.
Right.
Lichtman was...
In my head, the first game that Wales played in the stadium, we lost 3-0 to Brazil in a game there. I'm sure we
second
did. That's right, there we are. I thought that was the first one. I remember thinking, it was just too comfortable for them, wasn't it? 3-0, and it was probably exactly that.
We had a few people missing. Giggs didn't play, I remember. And we had Ewan Roberts playing, no offence, but... Like,
but the Brazilians were facing Roger Freestone
and Roger Goldwyn, Freestone.
So they upped their game, clearly.
Our team is...
But the previous game you said we lost to Finland?
Yes.
Right. And when were Finland ever any good?
Well, they had Lippmann in his prime at that point.
And Hippier, wasn't it? It wasn't a bad...
Yeah, it was
Finland were knocking on the door.
By Finnish standards, that was...
Okay.
But that's what the point you're trying to make, perhaps, is that, you know, teams raised their game when they came to that stadium. It took us a long while to adapt to that stadium. But we did beat Germany. We did okay against Argentina in, you know, some champagne friendlies. But I don't know. I don't mind. They're gonna make a couple of quid off the back of the game. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't object to it as a one-off in the sense... I mean, I object to it in the sense that I would rather... I agree with you, Dan. I would rather it be at the Cardiff City Stadium.
Because
I think
it brings football ground.
Yeah, it brings a different vibe and it brings a different energy, I believe. But for me, my kind of goals for the game, kind of what I said really, I would like to continue to be encouraged by Ryan Giggs as head coach.
Yes. Yeah. However that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I would like to not see any injuries with the more important game coming next.
Ramos will be playing, so...
Yeah.
There's only one thing I want, other than that kind of general thing. I just want to see Bale mug Ramos off.
That would be incredible.
And I want him to mug him off and to just bury one in the bottom corner or top corner, even better.
Yeah.
And give him a Robin... Robin Friday, flicking the V's as he just peels away.
Yeah.
So not even go looking for the adulation first. The first person he goes to look for is Sergio.
Robin Friday.
A little glimpse over his shoulder and says, there you go. Serge, or whatever his nickname is in the club. Because he can't probably have played against. Has he ever played against Ramos?
Spurs might have been Real Madrid in the quarter final in 2010-11
season. Yeah. I think you're right.
Once or twice.
Yeah.
Bale's a different specimen player now, though, isn't he? That's all I'm interested in.
Wouldn't he play him on the training field? Shirts versus skins?
Yeah.
You're playing against him.
Yeah, but not in a...
Not the Millennium Stadium. Sorry, Principality Stadium.
No. We'll bleep the P word out.
A bit of history, just copying Dan's predictions, by the way. It's funny because I'm going to do it again. We will lose.
I think I only ever got one right, and that was the Wales-Slovakia score.
I got that right, thanks to you.
And I managed to get some sort of Oracle-style sort of reputation on the back of it. I think we'll get a goal. I just can't... I think we're going to lose, but, you know... 2-1, there we are. I've said it, they'll beat us 2-1.
Yeah, exactly. As I said on the last podcast, that I would be happier with a 2-1 defeat than a sort of ground out 0-0 draw where we just sort of set up not to concede, because I want to see us have a bit of a go. And like we were discussing earlier, let's see if we can score a goal against a good team like them. And I mean, you'd think the form of some of our attacking players quality of our attacking players, we should be able to score goals against, which back ourselves to score, you know, against any team. And so if we lose 2-1, I think I'd be all right with that. If we see some, you know, continuing promising signs that Giggs is going to be a really good manager.
But I think this is quite a revealing discussion, because, I mean, speaking from, I don't know what you guys are thinking, from my point of view, the fact that I no longer really care about the friendly against the big team kind of suggests, I think, that I care, or rather my focus is all on the competitive games, because I feel like every competitive game we have, we've got a really strong chance of winning. We're involved in qualifying now, which is normal for us. So it doesn't really, it's not going to define a generation if we beat Spain in a friendly. What defines this generation now is qualifying for tournaments and playing in quarterfinals and semifinals. So I don't even think if we were to be playing France in a friendly, we beat them. I don't think that would be such a big deal now, because we qualify for tournaments and
France are the best team in the world at the moment. Not many people beat them. So, you know, we lost 2-0 out there. It was very comfortable for them. But most of the teams that we're going to come up against would find themselves in a very similar situation.
Yeah. Oh, look, but what I mean is, I think even if we did beat France, for example, in a friendly, I don't think that would define this team. Because I think what's more important for this team is tournaments, because we have a serious chance of qualifying for tournaments, and that's what we're about now. Big kind of glamour friendlies aren't really relevant to us, I don't think, in the same way they were when we didn't have a chance of qualifying, really.
Nice.
And it would be,
yeah, like beating Brazil in sort of the early 90s.
Yeah, or beating Germany. I mean,
yeah, but when we did beat Brazil in the early 90s,
true,
we were on the cusp of, you know,
that's true.
When we missed out on two tournaments by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah.
So we felt, I mean,
but you'd rather qualify, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But we didn't qualify, so the victory is one of the standout.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I can remember those big victories when I was a child, precisely because we didn't qualify. There was nothing to compare them to.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, we want both. We want to beat them and qualify.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. I just don't want focus, and not that it would with this group of players, but all the focus needs to be on the competitive game.
And I think we'll give them another boot in.
Yeah, hopefully. Horrible team. Amazing
Ireland
fans, an amazing country, but a horrible team.
With Ireland having played Denmark on the Saturday.
I think that could be a draw. Ireland are awful, but I think it must be a reaction.
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Unless they've gone so far beyond.
What was their
caring
score? Because they played a friendly, then when we played Denmark. Did they play Poland?
Or was that Northern Ireland?
Oh, maybe I'm confused.
Didn't they play Israel in a friendly? Or was it a Nations League?
I think.
No, Northern Ireland played Israel because they're in.
If only there was some way of finding out.
I think the more pertinent game is the playoff game last year when Denmark pumped them 5-1 in Dublin.
Yeah.
So in terms of reaction, they need a reaction off the back of the pumping that we gave them, if they have any designs on this Nations League, but also that, you know, saves some face after that game.
But I think it's the combination of things. I don't know how far gone the squad is with the management, whether they simply will not respond and hope these guys.
If Denmark were to win, then Ireland just would they not just then kind of they're done and dusted anyway. Well, they're probably done and dusted with this format anyway.
Yeah.
Play, you know, issues with the management. If Denmark were to beat them, would our game against Ireland become a sort of meaningless procession?
But this is the point. It's not like they go, okay, let's start a youth revolution. They haven't got any.
It kind of reminds me of how it used to be with Wales. They're just picking those players because that's the best they've got, and they haven't really got any other options.
Yeah.
And then,
so the only hope is, do they get in some new coaching team with maybe some fresh ideas, new approaches, no baggage with Roy Keane, you know, type issues.
Well, it's interesting. I was listening to Clinton Morrison, the former Ireland striker, on Sky, and he was saying Ireland are basically at day zero of their project in terms of they're getting former players in to work with like the under 12s, under 14s, under 13s, all that kind of age stuff. Basically what we were doing, like along, they've kind of reset it.
Mm.
So they're not going to see any results for mate like 10 years. It's going to be a long, long, long road for them.
Yeah.
And it's pretty grim. And this kind of links back actually to bring it all full circle to what Brian Flynn said about under 23 football and reserve team football, which he thinks has been part of the reason for difficulties with Scottish, Irish players. And he said in Scotland they've reintroduced reserve team football instead of under 23 academy football. And he believes that will then lead to Scotland getting some really good players coming through.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if he's right with that.
Yeah, I found that very interesting. I wasn't sure I entirely agree.
What is their reasoning for their... Why do they think that is the change that needs to be made?
Brian certainly was implying that. If you're 23 and you're playing against 23-year-olds and younger, you're in trouble. You're not going to learn football. Brian basically thinks once you're 18, you need to be playing against men.
Essentially, being good in age group doesn't mean anything because by definition, it's a very limited pool.
There's pros that have come out, hasn't there? Stephen Gerrard has come out and sort of said, look, too many players, they're just interested in flicks and stuff against 20. And he said, it's not football.
Other sports
not pro
have learned
football,
that lesson in the sense that players come through as like the top juniors. And say, how many of them ever go on to make it? And people can't understand why, if he was the top junior, why doesn't he make it then as an adult? Thinking, well, top junior is completely artificial. You're only playing against a thin band of people your own age. Whereas the moment you enter the senior game, you play
everyone,
all of the best people available. They may be onto something there.
There's nothing really riding on the games either.
Yeah.
It's not points and titles and stuff either. I mean, there's probably some medals at the end.
And I mean,
so they need to play against players who are physically bigger than them. Journeymen who've been around the clock, streetwise, cynical, and also play under pressure, where how you play in a meaningful game.
I think some clubs have got philosophies in place, though, isn't it? It's about, you know, having...
That's to maintain a technical
and yeah, but this is how we will play and things like that. So there's that kind of blueprint that some clubs will insist on. So Pep famously has it all the way, and it's that Dutch school. They all play exactly the same way. So they'll have that, but it's still, like you said, it's still within certain parameters that says it's only certain types of players you're going to be playing against. And Flynn came out and said that, and he... was a thing or two about bringing youngsters through, I suppose it's fair to say.
Yeah.
Should we wrap it there? Full circle seems like a good point to finish
on,
but unless there's anything else.
Just a quick pub quiz thing.
Oof.
Question and answer. This is the first time we've played Spain since we beat them 3-0 in the 86 qualifier. Well,
think
it must be, isn't it?
Or did they then pump us? Because they pumped us 3-0 in the reverse qualifier. Did that come first?
That was in the first game.
We lost the first game.
We lost 3-0 out there.
1-0 out.
And we lost to Iceland.
We lost to Iceland. Beat Iceland. And we need to basically win 3 games in a row, I think, then. We beat Iceland, beat Spain, and then drew with Scotland.
Mm.
Right, that would make sense.
It's the first time we played since then.
I think Basque 11, didn't we?
Yeah, we have played in
Spain, in inverted commas.
But without Googling it, I can't think of us playing Spain in an international football match since I was watching the Welsh football team.
Andorra's a bit Spainy, but no.
Yeah, close,
I think you're right.
Close. Portugal's a bit right. Spainy as well. The Basque,
we should be playing Catalonia
Spain
at the CCS. That would get me going. That's what we want. Game against Catalonia at CCS. PK, be playing for Catalonia.
What are you saying? That this could be the last time?
Yeah, fingers crossed.
That
wow,
we play
that'd
Spain.
Be incredible. That would be amazing.
The last time.
I think every neutral football fan really wants to see a Spain versus Catalonia game, don't they?
Oh,
I do.
Man,
that would be awesome.
Because it's called Spain, if it's against Catalonia, wouldn't it have to be like
Castilla?
There's too much at stake for the Spanish establishment and state and monarchy to lose, isn't there, in anything, to even just entertain that.
Yeah. I think it'll happen one day, but
just
imagine like if it had been happening like the last 10-15 years with these incredible like Catalan players that have been playing for Barcelona, the level of technical quality and combined with Needle, it would just be...
Well, very good footballers have seen the breakup of a country before with Yugoslavia, because you look at how good the teams that came out of Yugoslavia were and all those players in the 90s that they had, and you're thinking, as one country, why were they not the best team around all the time?
It's really...
Because the little ones that have come out of it have always been pretty handy.
It's really strongly, believed, reported that had Catalonia being independent, at the time, Messi would be playing for Catalonia because he considered himself a Catalonian above all. But it would never, ever, ever be an option that he would have played for Spain. But Catalonia would have been his national team.
Really?
Yeah. He's a Catalonian. That's how he sees himself. Well, which explains a lot of his relationship with Argentina. But
there's a lot of interesting stuff around Catalonia in the Johan Cruyff autobiography.
I will
look at that. Absolutely integral to the whole blueprint of Barca, modern Barcelona, which is largely lifted from sort of Ajax of the 70s. But yeah, a lot of stuff in there about identity and language and stuff like that. And that Jordi, so there's an interesting passage about how, although all of his children would go back, his wife would go back to the Netherlands for the birth of the children, they wanted to register the name. They didn't actually register the name of Jordi until they returned to Barcelona. And the Jordi is considered a Catalan name at that time. I think Franco is still around. The language was outlawed, and therefore all of the names were outlawed.
Yeah, he's either gone or he's on the way out. Because I didn't realise that just how strict, well, it sounds silly now, but with Franco, I think it was illegal to even write anything in Catalan or read anything in Catalan. If you were caught with a book written in Catalan, you could be in prison.
Fascism has been a bit nasty. Who'd have thunk?
Well, yeah, but often people, you can say that without detail. Do you see what I mean? So there's a detail as to where you operate.
Well, yeah.
So you are basically told that you are Spanish and this is what being Spanish is. So clearly, they've had this coming, haven't they?
Yeah,
this day was always going to arrive.
Yeah, and this is all happening again now. So in light of this, I would just say, I hope we win. Fuck Spain. Viva Catalonia, viva Cymru.
A little bit of politics there. Okay, let's leave it there.
We will wrap it up this time.
Until next time.
Thanks. Oh, please leave that in, Russ.
Oh, yeah, no, leave that in. People always let you down. They never